Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome back to the Four Elements. This is Ben.
This is your boy Earth.
And this is Water.
And tonight we're going to talk about the upsetting news that's going on in Baltimore subsequent to Freddie Gray's death. In the last few months, of course, you all know that we've been experiencing a tremendous amount of police brutality that's been reported and documented very more vividly than ever before. And as a consequence of that exposure and how law enforcement and the legal system has responded to those issues, there's been a tremendous amount of disturbance in the community and a lot of uprise. We've seen it in New York, we've seen it in Ferguson, and you know, various parts of California, and now we're experiencing in Baltimore. So I just wanted to throw it over to Water and have him recap exactly what transpired out in Baltimore. We do that for us, Water?
Well, I think Earth's going to be a better Earth is our researcher of the group. I think Earth is going to probably be the best one with the facts. Earth, can you kind of line us up with the facts so we can kind of drop the facts out there about the scenario?
Yeah. So basically, you know, Freddie was, and I'm just going off the video. So he was, you know, accosted by police. A scuffle ensued. Of course, he got beat up, and he was literally drugged into, I think it was the back of an ambulance or some squad car or something. I don't remember. But nevertheless, by the time he got, it was ambulance, but so by the time he got to the hospital, his neck was broken, his face was swollen and bruised, and, you know, he was on life support, basically. And that's kind of what happened in a nutshell. And so there's no video around what transpired between the time he was drugged into the ambulance and the time he got to the hospital. So there's no footage on that at all. And so what happened, you know, of course, you know, people are upset, which is very understandable, and people begin to riot. Now, my issue with the entire situation is that it's being blown out of proportion by the media, and it, you know, the focus has been so much on the rioting, where it's been estimated there's only like 100 people doing the rioting out of the thousands of peaceful protesters that are there. So that's where I have an issue in how it's being portrayed. And I'm not a conspiracy theorist. However, I think that there's something going on, like in the background, that's hidden, because never before have we had instances where, you know, police brutality was put on the national and global media in the way that it has been of late, within the last couple of years or so, last 2-3 years, and it occurs as though it's getting worse and worse. And when I go online, I read like an article on CNN or, you know, Fox or whatever news network, one of the things that I notice is there, of course, you have the people who are saying, you know, it's unjust, and then you have an overwhelming number of people who are categorizing everyone out there protesting, and hell, not even that they went out there protesting, but, you know, all people of African descent as animals. So it's just, to me, a lot of propaganda that's being spread that's not true. I think that everything could have been handled a lot differently than it was handled by the media, a lot more responsibly. But I think, in my opinion, that we're just being set up to be, you know, put into some type of police state, because, you know, you have to spread propaganda in order to get people to buy into some type of curfew, and curfew is another but martial law, some type of martial law. And when that's imposed, then people are going to say, oh, well, yeah, that's justified because, you know, African Americans don't know how to handle themselves. We're animals. We're whatever. And then it just starts there. But once that's accepted, then, you know, it becomes, you know, some type of, this is my opinion, some type of martial law that is nationwide where everyone is actually under police control. But that's just my two cents. I'm going to turn it back over to the other elements. I hope that was enough information for you all to chime in.
Yeah, I just want to remind the audience, too, that if you press 1, we can see you in the queue, and we will acknowledge you and allow you to make a comment or have a question, be vocalized. So we will certainly love you to have your participation, so I hope that you guys participate tonight. I wanted to ask the guys, do you think that this is just a function of technology, in the sense of more video capability with our phones and also social media?
You know, this is water.
Yep.
And, you know, I actually think that that is true, because had it not been for the one of the most famous police brutality cases in American history, which is the Rodney King case, had it not been for the video footage, King's whole interaction with the cops, then that wouldn't have gained the notoriety that it gained. And so now people have camera phones, and somebody can have a video up on YouTube within 60 seconds of it happening. So I think that that's a huge that has a huge impact on the whole scenario, because it's one thing for somebody to say that it happened, but it's another for people to see this happen, this kind of stuff happen. So I just think that it is a function of technology, where everyone has a video camera with them now. Well, I'd say, 90-something percent of the American population carries some kind of camera phone around with them, you know, pretty much at all times. How about you, Earth? You think it's a function of technology?
Well, first I need to know, what does he mean by, say a little bit more about it being a function of technology before I answer the question, because I want to make sure that I'm answering the question that you're asking. Are you, and I guess I can ask, are you saying it's the way the media coverage is of it is a function of technology, or just the mere fact that it's been recorded is a function of technology? Because to me, they're two totally different things.
The fact that that all eyes are on Baltimore and all eyes are on the legal process, all eyes being on police brutality and how police officers, you know, interact with community. Do you think that just the uprising in itself, you know, is a function of that technology and utilizing social media?
Rising itself in Baltimore, no, because I don't think people needed to see that video to uprise. I mean, when it's localized, people are going to know what happened, right, in their community. So I don't think it's just the function of just technology itself, because there's no video of him actually dying. There's even not even the video of him being beaten. that I've seen. It's just the media coverage itself, which actually, I would say, perpetuated that more so than that the actual video. So in that instance, I would have to say no. And, you know, you can go online, really, and look up police brutality of white dudes. And you're going to find white, matter of fact, I saw a video, this white guy got shot right in the middle of the highway by some highway patrolman. So you can find people of all different, well, not all different ethnicities, but a lot of ethnicities of people who have been victims of police brutality and who've been actually killed, had their lives taken away. And you don't find that getting the kind of exposure. So for me, there is something else at play. This is my opinion, because it's not like it's only African-Americans who are being killed, but we get the most coverage. So I think that there's something else at play. Kerr is, though, you know, we are the primary victim. And I'm not saying that the coverage shouldn't exist or it should exist. I mean, I think it's all of it, you know, the entire act of the police brutality, from what I've seen, is just uncalled for. You know, whatever happened, just tasing somebody and calling it a day. I wouldn't say that it's just totally a function of technology. There's something else at play to me. This is my opinion.
Okay.
What do you think that something else is?
Well, hold on, guys. Before we keep this going on, we have somebody in the queue. He's been waiting for a few minutes. So, yeah, I definitely, you know, want to get to them. They've been waiting.
Absolutely.
I want to bring them into this conversation before we kind of delve and keep going down there. Just hold that question for Earth. Cool with me bringing the caller on?
Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. Go ahead.
Okay, caller, last four digits, 8661. 8661, state your name, where you're calling from, and your question or comment.
Good afternoon, people. My name is Hart. I'm calling from Waldorf, Maryland.
Hart.
What's up, Hart?
Not much. How y'all fellas doing?
Good, bro. How you doing?
All right, maintaining. I just wanted to give a little perspective, you know, living in Maryland right now. First of all, this is the second time I've lived in the same state where similar things have happened, which will ultimately lead to concentration camps. The reason I say that is when I was in graduate school in Louisiana, you can see them building them, you see them shipping in, you know, tons and tons of coffins. So this is not hearsay or, you know, any other, like, you know, theoretical, you know, BS. In regards to this, you guys were just talking about technology, and people don't understand the pertinence in this issue. What people don't realize is the reason all the kids were together is because they had just get out of school, like literally the school bell had just rung. So they used technology to plan, you know, some sort of revolt or rebellion during school. You know, that's probably the greatest use of technology. That's why they were all in the street together. That's where moms are out, because, you know, a lot of moms, if it's middle school, some of the kids are in middle school, some are in high school, they might, you know, the mom might meet them, you know, outside or in the neighborhood, or be out, you know, smoking a Newport, you know, whatever, you know what I'm saying? So that's why all the kids were together. Secondly, I want people to understand the 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendment, which deal with citizenship, citizen versus naturalized citizen. I hope there's some lawyers or people that know the law on call so they can really, you know, reiterate this fact. But a lot of these things happen and decisions are made in court because, you know, we as people of African descent aren't really citizens of this country. We're technically foreign nationals by the laws in place, because we didn't have a naturalization ceremony like people do that came in on Ellis Island and other means and what they're using now. So if you didn't have a naturalization ceremony, you're not a naturalized citizen, so you're not awarded all the benefits, which, you know, including the law, and a lot of this is based off the, you know, Dred Scott decision in the past. And then lastly, if people look at, you know, the impact that this had, that there's foreign heads of state like the president of Iran is out. There's presidents of Cuba, lots of different, you know, foreign heads of state talking about, you know, black men in America. So, you know, I can foreshadow seeing that America, you know, eventually will be like the church, where it's a whole lot of black women, some black gay men, and then the rest of the, you know, straight ones have been, you know, courted by these other countries. Because, you know, for these heads of state to come out and adamantly, you know, voice their opinions, like, this is a travesty. And if you look at the words they're using, you know, African people or whatnot in the United States. So I just feel like, you know, it's setting something up, especially, like I said, I start off the statement, you know, seeing, you know, coffins being shipped in. So, like I said, you know, people just look at that, but really educate yourselves on that, you know, language about citizenship. I'm very proud of those young men, you know, for standing up. You know, everything starts with the youth. And this time, you know, the youth weren't picked, like in the, you know, civil rights movement, that we only want the ones that went to college who, you know, at that time meant, you know, their ideology was mostly the same. We're very proud of them. I hope they continue. You know, a lot of gangs in Baltimore, you know, got together. And, you know, like that wire stuff, you know, it's real. Like, they filmed that in, like, the actual neighborhood. So if you drive past it, you know, it looked like, you know, it's a real fucked up neighborhood. Ain't no other way to say it. Like, that part of town or whatnot. So to have, you know, gangs, you know, unite against, you know, a common enemy, you know, it's glad to, you know, I'm happy to see young brothers waking up. But like I said, you know, our people, we should, you know, really educate ourselves on those amendments, because, you know, that'll give you the answer to a lot of your questions or whatnot. And, you know, it even says, like, if you accept something, you forfeit your rights to the cost, you know, whatever it says in there. So by agreeing or signing the things, you know, you normally don't have to do that. Like, a lot of times, I don't mean to take up a lot of time, but a lot of times you see black celebrities always get charged with tax evasion, and they always get sued. But, you know, a lot of y'all think, you know, football, you know, athletes and stuff, a lot of people think they're dumb, but, you know, they're really just exercising those rights of, technically, I'm not a citizen, you know, doing things like that, and they're just fighting through the courts. But usually you never hear about it again. But like I said, I'm real proud of those young men. I wish, you know, all our youth that age take it up on that level, on our level. We can take it up with, you know, education and economics. And like I said, I appreciate your time.
Wow, thanks, Harp. Appreciate you always coming to the show with some good information. So, Elements, what do you all think about what Harp said? I have my opinion, but I want to hear what you have to say first. So I'm actually glad that he brought that up about, you know, being a naturalized citizen and not being a naturalized citizen, and actually going through the ceremony. And we didn't go through no ceremony at all to officially become a citizen, which is true. Hence, every 50 years, we have to actually, there's a vote that takes place which allows us to actually be able to vote again. So we don't actually have the right to vote if we're actually allowed to vote. And it's only temporary until someone says, nah, we don't want them to vote anymore, then you won't vote. But what do you all think about that? What Harp had to say?
I'd be interested to hear, like Harp was saying, an attorney chime in. I don't know if we have any callers, you know, who are attorneys or, you know, paralegal or just in that world. But that would be an interesting take to hear, because a lot of times, as far as I'm concerned, I've tried to look at a law, man, and whenever they come out with like a new bill or something, and it's all legally. So I honestly don't know what any of that stuff either means or says, because a lot of that stuff, when it comes out, it's just in total, it's just in a foreign language to me. So I'd be interested to hear what someone has to say, you know, from a legal perspective about that.
What about you, Wynn?
What I would say is that they have the law, right? And then they have what's called the spirit of the law. And frankly, both the law and the spirit of the law is not supportive of black men and women. We all know that. And then you have those individuals that are in the legal field, are in law enforcement, and then you have the greater community itself. And all of those are extensions of the law and the spirit of the law. So here we are in America, and in my view, not the law, not the spirit of the law, not the legal environment, not the law professionals, not the community, you know, really, genuinely, you know, wants us here. So, you know, I would certainly agree with Harp about that. And I know that Harp would probably say, you know, we got to do for self and keep it moving and do something else. I'm pretty sure he would say that. Are you still on, Harp?
1 minute. Let me get Harp back.
No, Harp was muted. Do we need him back on?
Yeah, I just got him back. Hello, Harp?
Yeah.
Yeah, go.
Hello, can you hear me?
Again, Wynn? Yeah, we can hear you. Hey, Wynn, go ahead and ask your question again.
Did you hear what I said, Hart?
Oh, yeah, most definitely. Like I said, the definition of insanity is, you know, having the same events or occurrences happen and expect different results. And, you know, I think now is the time, you know, with all the resources and intellectual property that we have, you know, it can be, you know, McDonald's and other places and, you know, African different stuff. Not McDonald's, but, you know, or whatever you want to do. That was just, you know, a caricature of, you know, a reference I thought everybody would pick up. But I think it's definitely, you know, time or whatnot. You know, if you look at politics, there's going to be you know, most likely a Republican president now, so a lot of benefits, which actually there are none, is going to get worse. And that pattern, you know, goes to show, because if you look at when Reagan was in president or was in office, that's when, look at so many things happened to the, you know, the black community at that time. It was devastating, and the effects still show now, so, you know, I think, you know, I don't know, I think the main thing from listening to you guys is to find out when that next 50-year vote is, because I believe, you know, that'll be the vote where, you know, people keep saying, Claude Anderson, you know, a lot of people saying that, you know, whenever they want to cut off the water, you know, it's going to get cut off, so that vote may be, you know, the key, because, you know, like I said, they are building camps, and, you know, thousands and thousands of coffins, you know, recyclable, reusable coffins, man, you know, are built, you know, ready to rock and roll as we speak. They're building them for something, you know.
What's beautiful, you know, that we've seen over the last couple of months is the solidarity amongst the youth, like Hart was talking about. I mean, in Ferguson and in Baltimore, you saw, you know, rivals, you know, coming together for one cause, for one purpose, and getting down in the trenches and fighting against, you know, this legal environment. And that's something that we haven't seen for a long time. And it really is beautiful. What's interesting is that, you know, here we are, we have a black president we have a black attorney general. And quite frankly, I mean, we've made some great progresses. We made some great strides. We've done some great things. But quite frankly, it's critical that on a grassroots level, on a more community level, that we band together to create something, you know, for ourselves. It's a shame that, you know, we have these black or African American figureheads, but we don't have the solidarity amongst ourselves to really, you know, get things done. And I give you an example. I mean, why is it that you know, Magic Johnson and Oprah Winfrey and Michael Jordan and, you know, all of these wealthy individuals haven't banded together and done something of great substance? You know, they've done great things in their own particular areas, but there's something that could be had if those individuals stand together. That would be such a, not just an inspiration, but I think they can actually do something of great substance together.
And let me add real quick that the right to vote for African Americans will be, the next time will be, what, 2057. That's the next time it'll be up for election. And it's not really giving us the right to vote, but it actually gives Congress the power to enforce the states to allow us to vote. That's really what it does.
Yeah, my argument is that, you know, the vote is not the end-all, be-all, that we need to be banded together on a more fundamental, more community level to actually get some things done for us.
Well, yeah, I agree with that. And one of the things that that Claude Anderson talks about a lot is group economics. And if you all, any of the listeners who haven't listened to Claude Anderson, I'll put a link on our Facebook page. But one of the things he talks about is group economics and how to build group economics. And that will actually be a step in actually stabilizing our communities, you know, stabilizing our economic growth, stabilizing education, and it really will stabilize the community as a whole. So every aspect of the community will be impacted by imposing group economics within our community. And I'll go ahead and post a link.
Can you speak a little bit about that, Earth? Like, elaborate a little bit on that?
Like, what part? I'm not clear. Like, when you say what that is.
The group economics.
So in a nutshell, you actually begin to build, you know, an infrastructure. So you, like, the first thing that we need to do would be to start spending, you know, money in our neighborhood so the money turns over more than just one time. So if the money turns over in your neighborhood 20 times, then that's actually going to create economic growth within the neighborhood. And I know some people I've heard complain about, well, the quality of the product. Well, that's where we have to be responsible. If you're getting a product or service that's not quality, then there's a conversation that needs to be taken. A conversation needs to be had at that point. And when I hear people talk about quality, I always ask, well, did you have a conversation with the manager or the owner? And I've never met anyone who said yes. Everyone says, well, no. I was like, well, why didn't you? I mean, you're not going to get quality unless people are aware that there's a demand for quality. You're not going to get it. You're just going to get whatever people's perception of the kind of quality that they're given is. You're not going to get anything higher than that.
So that's like that's actually the first step. That's the most basic step. You know, that's the easiest step. So any comments about that?
Well, no, I mean, but that's a great example. I just wanted you to elaborate. I had an idea of what you were describing, but I just wanted you to elaborate for the listeners out there, because you know, that happens in other you know, whether it be you know, Latin or Korean or Russian, or you know, maybe it's whatever the group is. There's an amazing amount of what you're talking about, like a turnaround. And you know, in Atlanta, there, you know, like you have K-Town, little Korea, kind of up in the Duluth area, where you just have a lot of different shots there. And of course, there are different pockets where there's a lot of Latin, kind of just like it's almost like a whole community where they have shops upon shops. And that would be an interesting to see that happen in the African American community.
Yeah, and one thing, our community.
Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say, I don't want to disparage our community, because we do that to a great extent. However, I think that, you know, with the capacity that we have, with the dollar that we control, that we could be doing so much more. I don't think that we're doing it in a committed or a focused, dedicated manner. And I think that we can actually be very intentional about collaborating with one another.
Yeah, and like one of the things that you know, needs to happen is, you know, people who gain a certain social economic status or educational level, they need to stop moving so far outside of the neighborhood, because then they're just a part of the problem. And if you live in a neighborhood, then you are actually a walking, breathing example for people. And when you're involved, go beyond just living there, when you become involved in your community, in your neighborhood, then that's where the difference can be made. It's very interesting. Like, I moved from Marietta to the West End in Atlanta. And for those who don't know, that's basically the inner city. And the reaction that I got from many of my friends was, why you want to move down there? That's like, I was just talking to a buddy of mine yesterday, and I was on the north side of town, and I was heading home, and I passed an ambulance. And then he said, oh, you must be close to home, because he heard a siren in the background.
Wow.
I said, no, I'm not close to home. And there's, like, I feel completely safe. Nobody's, like, stalking me, looking to rob me or anything like that. It's just that, unfortunately, a lot of times we have bought into the stereotypes that have been put out there by whomever it's been put out there by. You know, I can't point the finger and say this person did it, but whomever put the stereotype out there. And, you know, I tell my friends all the time, like, look, this is probably one of the best decisions I've made in my entire life. And I moved down here because, A, I wanted to, like, live in a community-based neighborhood. I guess that was at the top of my list. And also, like, one of my goals for moving down here is to begin to download or give, like, all the knowledge that I've gained over, you know, by my career as an adult. And so what I want to do is start a software development program for kids, because I figure, like, I learned how to develop software when I was 10. Then, you know, a lot of other people have the same ability and capacity to do that. But if nobody's moved back and showing them that, oh, well, the cell phone that you have in your hand is actually powerful enough, actually is more powerful than the computer that was in the Apollo spacecraft. Your little cell phone can actually power that. is actually more powerful than what they had at the time. If they don't know that, that what they have in the palm of their hand is actually, it's a full-blown computer, and they can do all kinds of things with it, develop all types of applications, then they're going to walk around on Twitter and Facebook and just using it as a communication device. And your cell phone is so much more than just a communication device to talk or to tweet or to, you know, post Facebook messages or whatever people do on their cell phone. You know, it's a powerful computer. So just bringing that knowledge and teaching that to kids, you know, that's something that will actually take them from where they are today, I don't know where it is, to someplace else from a knowledge perspective. And then they can possibly see a pathway to, you know, a future that they may not have seen or may have seen and just didn't know how to get there. Like, so that's one of the things that, for me, I think we need to, not even think, we need to begin to do and not vilify our neighborhoods like other people vilify the neighborhood, period.
I totally agree, but what distinguishes you from other people is purpose and also compassion. A lot of us, you know, we get out and we celebrate, and we celebrate ourselves, and, you know, we escaped the hood, you know what I mean? We moved on and we went to college, we went to law school, medical school, or whatever, and then we moved out to the suburbs and we made it, right? But we don't have any compassion for others, or we don't have a purpose of actually serving, you know, our communities. And one of the great things that impacted that was the end of segregation. So, for example, you and I, Earth, as well as Harp, we went to historically black, you know, institutions. And some of those individuals were able to go to other schools and, you know, generations past. And, you know, that purpose, you know, disintegrated. So how do we get that back?
Well, it's to get it back, and this is just all my opinion, to get it back, you have to first, like, reconnect with who you are. And the brother that's walking down the street, the sister that's walking down the street, you know, the brother that's in the cubicle next to you, or whomever it is, that's a reflection of you. You're not an anomaly. Nobody's an anomaly. What you're doing is not unique. And we have to understand that if the person next to me's life isn't working, guess what? My life isn't working. It's really that simple. And understanding that concept. And that begins to bring back, you know, community. But we have to first acknowledge that. Go ahead.
Yeah, I totally agree. And what I was going to say is just simply, by the way, I think that instances such as what happened in Baltimore creates the type of, could be a catalyst in creating that purpose and compassion again. Because just like we saw in Crash, police brutality or these types of incidents can happen to any of us. And once we're reminded of that, then, you know, that could create the space for us to actually act differently.
Yeah, absolutely right.
Yeah, I was going to say, I agree as well. You know, that it just creates an awareness that, I mean, of course, no one wants to see these types of things happen to any human being, regardless of what race they are. But, you know, it just kind of reminds us of what you were saying, Wynn, because you come from a financial background, and you know, the power of you know, our dollar in particular. And you know, I would be interested, Earth. I definitely want to make sure that you post that you know, the link on the you were referring to it as group economics.
Yeah, it's Dr. Claude Anderson.
Yeah, because I'll be interested to take a look at that myself.
Okay.
And yeah, I would argue that it's not that. Just... I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, no, you go ahead. I'm looking up the video now. Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, I would argue it's not just about economics. It's about, you know, us to coming together about education and politics. We need the very best that, you know, that we have to come together and do something. And that means lawyers, politicians, business people, athletes, you know, entertainers. I mean, it's really a group effort that's required to really, you know, push us all forward. I think that if there was a concerted effort, you know, I think this nation would be in a very good place, not just our community, but the nation in total.
Yeah, I think it was what Earth was referring to. It's just you know, developing that community. I think that's really the best way, because in a nutshell, from the outside looking in, I've seen other cults. Someone who kind of comes to the country and, you know, they kind of don't have a problem of staying in things that we call substandard living in order for them to come up. And then once everyone comes up, you know, they kind of take their money pool together. But like you just said, it has more to do with just money. You know, it has to do with a lot more than just money. So I like that input on that feedback.
Yeah, and one of the things that really struck home for me, and I can't even say struck home, but got my attention when I initially listened to Dr. Anderson several years ago, is when he said, you know, the thing about being a minority is whenever somebody classifies you as a minority, that they're just saying you're a loser. When he said that, I was like, whoa. I never looked at it from that perspective. And that really got my attention.
Not only are you a loser, but you'll always be a loser. Oh, man.
Yeah, so if there's anyone, go ahead.
I was just going to say that, you know, there, you know, out of, you know, negativity and despair, out of these unfortunate incidences can actually come about some great things, some great outcomes. You know, after the pain comes ease, and I'm hoping that, you know, out of these instances that police officers and law enforcement begin to utilize technology and wear cameras on their body, so that they're being, not only will they be in check, but, you know, the people that they claim that are aggressive towards them will be in check, and that checks everybody, and then that actually reduces reduces crime and the incidences of police brutality. And I hope that this also creates solidarity within our community.
Yeah, I think it will create solidarity. And we don't, the thing about it is, what needs to be done, in my opinion, is not difficult. It's not a long road to travel. It's really simple. You know, it's not complex. or anything. And it, and if you have a conversation with someone who is considered a quote-unquote thug or, you know, gangbang or whatever, you'll find that from my experience, I mentored two guys who were classified as that. And the beauty is once they let their guard down, which, you know, it's just a conversation and you just have to create relatedness. Once they got that I wasn't born with a silver spoon in my mouth, because one of them expressed this, and I don't know what the other one thought because I didn't ask. He thought that, you know, whatever lifestyle I was living, I grew up that way. And once he got that I didn't, he let his guard down. And, you know, I didn't judge him for anything he'd done in the past. You know, whether he had shot at people, shot people. He said he didn't know, you know, he was like, yeah, I don't even know if I've killed somebody before. He said, I have no clue. But I didn't judge him for that. I was just concerned about, like, what's going on right now with him. And the beauty of it is once relatedness was created, once trust was there, and it didn't take months, you know, it didn't take years. It was just after two simple conversations he and I had. You know, he started to express, like, the things that he really wanted to do. And it wasn't, he didn't want to go out and be in a gang. That was never on the top of his list of what he wanted to do. So we had conversations, and over the course of, you know, 2 or 3 years, he graduated from high school, got his GPA up, and went off to college, and now, you know, he doesn't live in Atlanta anymore. He moved to Dallas, and he's in IT. He has an IT job. I think it was with a cellular phone company. I don't remember which one at one point, but I think he's working someplace else, and I haven't talked to him in a while. You know, and the same thing with the other guy. He always wanted to be a mechanic because he loved cars. So it was just a series of conversations. That's all it took. A series of conversations and a little bit of time. Cost me any money, didn't cost really anything from a financial perspective. It was just time, which I was more than happy to give up, you know, in order to save their lives. And I wasn't looking at it like I was saving their lives. I looked at it like when I saw them, I don't have kids, but I saw them as my son. That's how I saw them. So I invested whatever time and energy I would invest in my kids, if I had kids, into them. The same love, the same compassion, the whole nine. And, you know, did they slip up and do stuff? Absolutely, because they developed habits over the years. You know, but they always came to me with it. And it was, if you all could have seen the look on the first guy I mentored, the look on his face the first time he actually got an A on a test. He came to my house, knocked on the door, and he was like, Mr. Alvin, guess what? He has his hands behind his back. I was like, hey, what's going on? He was just grinning. He said, no, guess. I started guessing all kind of stuff. He was like, nope. And he was just smiling. And at the time, he was 16, and that was one of the first times he actually looked like a child, meaning his demeanor and his energy was that of a child. And he handed me the test, and he got an A. And he was just the proudest I've ever seen him. And he was just grinning from ear to ear. He just went through, like, the detail of how he studied. I didn't talk to him about studying because that wasn't important to me whether he studied or not. I didn't concentrate on that. I didn't even concentrate on school. I just concentrated on being related to him, and we just talked about whatever he wanted to talk about. You know, that's how I related to him. And he took it upon himself to study. And the same thing with the other guy. You know, I didn't have to say, oh, you need to do your work if you want to have a future. Kids don't want to hear that. That's foolishness. They don't want to hear that. They want to know that, you know, somebody actually cares about them. And somebody they can relate to, that's an elder, really. That's what they want.
Wow.
So,
hey,
Earth,
we,
go ahead.
That's a wonderful story, man. I think we have another call in the queue. Like somebody popped up into the queue. I know we got about 9 minutes left in the
go for
the show. You guys want to?
Yeah, go for it.
Excellent. Call the last 4 digits, 8661. 8661, you're live on the air.
Just wanted to give feelings, not to, beat a dead horse, but I just had one point that I thought I made, but people was missing, and that's the true essence of this whole thing. That point is what people are missing is the classism of this. The revolt is not going to come from the college level because before I went to, black college, first college I went to out of high school was Duquesne University. So, I saw both sides, and I know there's no history out of black college besides outside the history department, and that's just real. So we need the people that didn't do that, that went through these situations, that know that, that side is a step in. And then the classism really comes in once again because these kids didn't go to college. The last time we had a revolt, it was handpicked, so-called talented 10th back in the 60s and 50s. And these are people that unheard of leading something. So that's what, we got to do a better job of going back and getting rid, bringing back the so-called unheard of. And that'll bring that economic, balance or whatnot, because like I said, that's the true essence of this revolt. It's unheard of because you're so young, texting in school and coming together to do something against, someone that's, bullied them, not only physically but economically. Like, most neighborhoods have, the neighborhood I grew up in, they used to have, a little store bus that drove around in each, parking lot or, different part of the neighborhood. Everything was overpriced, but, you were buying it from a black dude from the neighborhood that put that together. But in a lot of these neighborhoods, it's not like the West End where you walk up MLK and buy anything from a computer to a 20 sack or, whatever, it's, Korean and Asians own these places and it's marking up. So, it's just to burn down things and know that, yes, in my neighborhood, but it ain't of me. Because, the black establishments didn't get any harm done to them. And no one really talks about that. So, I just think that's, sad or whatnot. But if you look at the classism and see that the uneducated, the people that didn't go to high school, aren't even in high school yet, dropped out of high school, came together and did this. What's wrong with us? Thank you.
Yeah, it's the people that, went to school that, were watching this from the office. So, yeah, I totally agree. I mean, it's the same revolution that was experienced in Egypt, the same revolution that was experienced in Libya with the downfall of Gaddafi. It's a grassroots social media phenomenon. It's a technological phenomenon that is being experienced all over the world, and all the governments are frightened of that type of uprising.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that, and it's it's going to take. It's going to take everyone to be involved because everyone has, regardless of your class or socioeconomic level, everyone has something to bring to the table, period. That's just my opinion. Also, if you go to our Facebook page, which is Four Elements on Facebook, I posted the video of Dr. Claude Anderson. It's called Powernomics. It's the title of the video. So it's on our Facebook page, so you can go there and watch it. What was I saying? Oh, yeah, it's going to take, it's going to take take a collaboration. And not just what we have to understand, and it's not just going to take a collaboration of, Africans in America. It's going to have to be a global collaboration. That's my opinion. Because people around the world are actually experiencing the same thing.
You can go any place. You can go to Europe. You can go to Australia. It doesn't matter where you go. And you have a conversation with people there of African descent, and you'll get the same response. You'll see the same stuff is happening. So it's not just isolated to, you know, Baltimore or just the United States. It's actually a global problem. And what's his name? Dr. Umar Johnson actually had a really good, I'm sure I can find his video, his lecture also. He actually talked about that in one of his lectures. How it's actually a global problem, which is true. So I know that we are down to the last 3 minutes of the show. So we need to go ahead and start wrapping up. So Water, what you got?
Yeah, I mean, I just want to reiterate what you were saying about this particular incident with this unfortunate event with this. You know, this guy had just an unfortunate incident with the cops. Like we alluded to, is just a symptom of something bigger. Do we have the solution? We're kind of just exploring the whole topic. So I think this is an ongoing conversation. And I think that, this conversation is a great starting point to just explore some of the possible solutions, and we kind of threw out some things that we think, but I mean, I just love to hear people give us some feedback on Facebook of what you possibly think maybe some solutions are, or some links to some things that we can read. I mean, there's elements we love just being exposed to documentaries or articles or, you know, any kind of research or anything you have. So send that on over to us, because this is just something that we feel is important, and hopefully you feel the same way. Earth, Wind?
Yeah, this is Earth. I want to be clear that the solution and the methods used for a solution are going to look, they have to be radical, because it's going to take something radical, like a total shift in the mindset and the view that we have of ourselves and the view that we have of our place in the world. It's going to take that, and it's going to take something radical. And some people may argue that it's racism, or something is racist about it, but it's not racism. It's really getting your house in order. And so whatever it takes to get your house in order, I'm down with that. You know, as long as it's, you know, something that's going to be effective and it's going to make the difference that needs to be made. So that's my closing remarks.
I'd like to just say thank you for everybody that listened tonight and participated with us. I totally agree that it requires radical thinking and radical execution to, you know, create a better place for all of us. And it really starts with, you know, people inside the community. You know, what are you willing to do to make it a better place for your community?
All right, so with that being said, you'll join us next week. I'm actually cooking up a show. I don't want to say what it's going to be about now, but just stay posted. And I'm going to see if we can have a special guest on next week to talk about a topic that's going to be a little different than our normal topics. So just stay tuned for that. But everybody have a fantastic evening on this Sunday. And actually, I didn't watch the fight last night, but I heard it was whack. So if it was, it was. But anyway, everybody have a good evening, fantastic week. And signing off, this is the Four Elements. And we will see you next week, same time, same channel. Peace.